part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
So, have you been?
I'm good, man. I mean, I've been a little. What's the word I'm looking for? I feel like I have been a little like, not frantic per se, a little jittery because I've been home for like 4 months straight. Like, oh. I haven't done any conventions since February.
Oh.
And this is the longest I've been home in like 2 years. So. Oh. I feel like I've been a little jittery. Like, I feel uncomfortable.
You need to get out
all the time. Yeah.
You need to get out amongst the public. I understand.
Yeah, man.
Well, let's say who you are. Let's say who you are. Let's get this started off right. Let's say that you are Trevor Fernandez Lenkevich.
Woo.
Yay. My name is Christian Horn, and this is another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast, episode 502. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
I can't believe it. What are we here to chat about? Cause you got like several projects. I mean, I think primary is Rise, which we've spoken about like on this podcast previously. Is Rise up on Kickstarter right now or it's coming?
So it is coming. So the Rise 2, where you will also have the opportunity to get that first issue, will be up on Kickstarter by, I believe June 18th is the target launch date. So depending on when this bad boy goes live. But if this does happen to make its way onto the interwebs beforehand.
Oh, it will.
Basically, we are in pre-launch. So you can go to any of my social media, click the link in the bio, and then there will be a little notify me on launch button in green, which you can click to be one of the first people to know when that campaign is live, because we've got a lot of really cool limited rewards.
Nice. And where's right that social media presence? Like, where can they find you since we're just getting started right off the top?
Sure. Yeah. So you can track me down on the place formerly known as Twitter at PWatchPress, and on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at PocketWatchPress.
Nice.
And yeah, those are the places. And there's always going to be something in the bio for you to track down whatever Kickstarter or comic I am currently trying to build off the ground.
Nice, nice. And I always like to give people a hard time about being on Twix. So they're still on Twix. So let's tell people, you've got two projects that we're talking about, right? It's like Rise, and then the other one is an anthology, Minutes to Midnight, correct?
Yeah, Minutes to Midnight, the hour between life and death.
Yeah. And so, I mean, since this is your interview and we've had several chats in the past, what would you like to get started with? Because I've read them both. Obviously, you were nice. I mean, I did support Rise when it came out and I finally got to read the first issue, and we had a whole podcast episode about that, but I had not read it yet. So now it's kind of like, oh, I've read it. I kind of see where you're going. And then you also were kind enough to provide me with Minutes to Midnight. So what would you like to get started with? What would you like the people to know about?
Let's chop it up with Rise, man, because I'm super excited for people to get in on this second issue. And hopefully, we can entice them with some ramblings.
Very cool. So why don't you get started with what Rise is about? Because, I mean, I know what it's about, but there may be other people who do not know. You know, there may not be consistent listeners of this podcast, or people who may not have met you on the convention circuit or been to your social media. What is Rise about?
Yeah, so Rise is effectively asking the question, what would happen if Superman had to do good to feel good? But ultimately, we are using that as a vehicle to explore the performative nature of masculinity and really what it means to be enough as a man in the contemporary world. I think as I've kind of come of age during the pandemic, I've questioned sort of what the societal standard of masculinity is and how beneficial it is as a tool for a man to use or a standard. In fact, I think oftentimes it can be a detriment. And I've come to, I guess, my own conclusion that I feel like in most scenarios, the role of a man is to do something for somebody else, right? Like you're told that you need to be strong for somebody, you need to be loving for somebody, you need to provide, you need to, you know, none of those things are inherently for you, right? And so I find very much that there is a correlation between that societal standard and the lack of like emotional resilience in men, especially men in power, right? Like men in power often, like when they're put under that, when they're put under that stress, they crack. And so this is also a little bit of an exploration of what happens when you have a man of power, and how sort of this character's journey forces him to ground himself in order to truly be extraordinary. And we'll be exploring some pretty adult themes. But yeah, that is kind of the gist.
Yeah. I mean, I read the first issue, like I said, for the first time, and I read it this week, cause I was one of the supporters of the Kickstarter. I like to support a bit if I can, you know, when I can. And I supported the digital because I do interview a lot of people and I want to support a lot of people, but it's like, you know, there's different price points, but I mean, I very much enjoyed this. I liked it a lot. I love the artwork. I mean, I thought it was very like, Stuart Immonen-ish. Like if anyone knows who that is, like it's like very professionally, beautifully rendered, like smooth lines, like really well constructed. The coloring is awesome as well. I mean, and I thought there were a lot of like interesting, because I mean, in the end, we're kind of talking about Superman a little bit, right? Like the template, right? And the costume reminded me a bit of another Superman kind of character. What's his name? Samaritan from Astro City, a little bit of like the red and the white. And I was wondering a little bit, because your company or your publishing, you know, handle is Pocket Watch Press, which was inspired by The Watchmen, right? Like I remember us having a conversation, you know, Dr. Manhattan, and you know, he used to be a watchmaker and his dad was like, no. And that's a whole other conversation that I've been having about art and AI in the future is, should we all be throwing our art out because AI is coming like Dr. Manhattan's dad did in The Watchmen. But I'm wondering, was there any inspiration like as far as the color palette or the design of the main character? Like he doesn't even have like a superhero name in this, right? So you're doing things like a little bit different. Were you inspired at all by like Astro City or Samaritan or just Superman? Or were you looking at different like sort of Superman templates as you were going about the visual design of this character?
Yeah. So, I mean, funnily enough, I haven't read Astro City.
Oh, really? You would love it.
I have the first three volumes because it took me a while to figure it out because there are no volumetric numberings on the trades.
Oh,
so
interesting.
I was like, so what is the actual reading order for this book? And I managed to get the first three trades, and I know for a fact upon consulting with several shop owners that is so, but I hadn't gotten to read it yet. I think as far as design goes, we wanted to keep it really simple and we wanted to keep it bold.
Yeah.
So when it came down to that, we knew that we really wanted to do a two color scheme, maybe a third as a highlight, but really, you know, I think as far as choosing the palette goes, we knew we wanted to do red. We knew red had to be a part of it.
Okay.
Right. Like there's something about it that is kind of connective tissue, like whether you look at Superman or Omni-Man or Homelander or, you know, all of the iconic Superman and Superman analogous figures typically have red in the palette.
Yeah.
And part of what I was interested in was using white as a means of purity, because this story is very much about a guy who is... like it's interesting because he is very much fueled by these very pure wants and desires. I mean, as you read issue one, you realize like a big part of what makes him great is his, not only the physicality of it, but emotionally as well, the intimacy, mm-hmm. you know, with his partner. And I thought white would be an interesting color to use as a metaphor. And actually, like, as we get further along in the series, the color of his costume, we get a little bit more explicit about it in that regard. So then it really came down to shape, and Ryan, I mean, he was so instrumental. I mean, I gave him like a super awful rough sketch, you know, of like what I thought about as a silhouette for the character's design. And I think I had even overcomplicated a little bit. Like I had some I had some unnecessary like new 52 lines in there. Like, let's just say that. And yeah. Ryan like really dropped down to like what made it cool and added some other elements, like little like cool like cufflink highlights or collar highlights. And I was big on like boots. Like I liked the idea of having like a little bit of contrast down the line of the leg, because I feel like if you go monotone down the leg, it just looks like a stick, you know?
Yeah.
So when we were going through, I was like, okay, so what are the iconic costumes that I love? One of the things that I appreciated a lot was like the Superman Rebirth costume, when like, even though they didn't quite bring back the trunks, I liked all the little red highlights that they put on the suit,
mm-hmm.
Just to kind of create degrees of separation. So we were using that. we had looked at some of the costumes in Mark Waid and Peter Krause's Irredeemable. We had looked Invincible, the some of the design language of Invincible costumes. So eventually, you know, Ryan had chopped up four, and I think we had expanded that to six by combining a couple elements from those original four that I liked. And we wound up with the one that you see today, which I'm really happy with. I mean, I think it's striking, and there is also a little bit of symbolism in there.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. It's interesting to me how like a red bodysuit to me works better than just a full blue bodysuit without the trunks. Like to me, red, maybe it's just because it's a lighter color and it just catches your eye more. But like, I do love the design of the suit, but I was like, am I imagining, because this is male, and because it's like, is it sort of like, is there a phallic component yeah. into, not to sound dirty or anything, because it's not. And you kind of have to look hard at it. That is such a bad choice of words, but you understand what I'm saying? Like, so it wasn't just in my mind, right? Like it was there, because I mean, I you may or may not know. I mean, I have a little web comic that I work on, and it takes like years for me to get like pages. Like it's literally taken me years. And the initial design, it was more like, it's more like a kind of like a kid's like cartoony thing, but people were like, oh, the logo looks phallic. And I was like, what? Like there were a couple of people, they were like, oh, it looks like this. And I was like, what? And I was like, this is for kids. Like, and only one person said it. And I was like, oh, this is just more about what that person's thinking. And then years went by and another person was like, oh, that kind of, so I had to change the logo. I was like, oh my God, I had to make it look more like a butterfly than like a, so, but in your design, this is intentional.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it's in, you know, not to like beat anybody over the head with it. But
No.
The entire conceit, you know, like the name of the book is Rise.
Yeah, like, gotcha.
You know, so that's definitely a conscious element. And I think, I mean, I'm sure we talked about it last we spoke, you know, a part of a man's like emotional health and their consideration of themselves has a lot to do with like sexual performance. Like that mm-hmm. is a component. Like sex is a big part of everybody's life. But I think particularly as far as the male ego is concerned, there's the social element, but there's also like biologically, you know, like what that does to your hormones and your brain. So yeah, it is not something that we're shying away from in this book. In fact, it's something that is actively a part of it.
The
cost, I mean, I love the final design, to be honest with you. And it's funny, actually, once we get off recording, I'll have to show you some of the original concept designs, because there was one where, there were two actually, where the logo was inverted and the bulk of the logo was actually like near the crotch.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
It was increasingly on the nose. Like,
That's
it
funny.
was very hard to run away from. And I remember being like, we can't do that.
Yeah,
We
let's be a little more subtle with that. No, it's interesting because I think it's a very striking design and it is very evocative of, you know, the Superman uniform and stuff like that, or like I said, Samaritan from Astro City, which you should read. I think you would love it. I think you would really like it. Just knowing the sort of things that you're into and the things that you've written, it seems very much up your alley. But there are a lot of really nice things that you did in this first issue that I have not necessarily seen in other sort of like superhero or even Superman, you know, adjacent, you know, kind of books. And a lot of them have to deal with the nature of kind of like male violence or male like power. You know, and I don't want to spoil anything for anything who hasn't read the first issue. I mean, the first issue is kind of like already out there, right? But can you speak to that a little bit? Because there is a scene of like kind of like domestic abuse that occurs, and your resolution of it was very kind of like it wasn't the sort of dude breaks through the wall and like slams into the, you know, and holds the guy up against the wall. It was very sort of like therapeutic, if that's the word that I can use, or like it was different, and I very much appreciated it because I feel like in comics, not just today but always, is the need for the action scene, right? The need for the, and I don't want to make it sound like this isn't compelling because it is very compelling, but you've done it a different way. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I appreciate that, and I'm really glad that that's something that stood out because, you know, we will have cool dynamic action scenes and rescues and feats of incredible strength, but you know, when the core concept of this book is exploring the male ego, I wanted John to have to come to grips with sort of, I guess I would say the failings of the male ego. You know, personified through these crimes that he's solving or these problems that he's trying to fix. And for me, like right off rip, yeah, dealing with a domestic violence situation, I think, you know, especially as it pertains to a result. I mean, it's super early on in the issue, so I don't really mind talking about it a little bit more in detail. But basically, for those listening, there is a man gets cheated on. And it's a particular stinger because his wife cheats on him with his younger brother, and obviously he is in a fit of rage. And the added component of John trying to talk him off the ledge while being like several buildings away makes him think that his apartment is bugged, and so obviously there's a an atmosphere of paranoia around it, and you know. I really did not want this to be something that John had to, or that John like would try to solve physically, right off the bat. I wanted it to there to be like an emotional call to action. And the thing I love, and I'm really glad you brought that particular scene up because that character actually comes back. We're really exploring not only the consequences of the male ego, insofar as when it is when it puts somebody in a position to overstep, but I also want to explore this idea of forgiveness, and not because I feel like people who commit those crimes immediately deserve it, but because I think it's a conversation worth having. You know, what is the extent to which somebody can be forgiven, and should they? You know, and it, yeah, it does run parallel to John because, in so many ways, this story is going to be weighed upon him making some major mistakes. And we see that he's capable of making mistakes, right? Like, is the sort of big sort of high energy scene of the book almost doesn't happen because I mean, he's lazy and he's cross-eyed for this woman and he just wants to be with her, right? So he's capable of making those severe mistakes, and he very much does that in issue two. And you know, he has to look at this other man in the face who did an awful thing, who feels awful about it, you know, and lives with that every day. And he has to watch somebody who did an awful thing be unable to forgive themselves. Not only that, but also like, I mean, it's we're really trying to make John face the consequences of sort of what his decisions could turn him into.
Yeah.
Even if it's not like directly corollary, but yeah, it's for me like that, especially, you know, with that scene in issue one being the first time John suits up as a hero.
Yeah.
I just wanted it to say something different about not only what this book was going to be, but also what kind of superhero he was going to be.
Yeah.
Like, even in the small ways in which we show sort of cutaway scenes of him saving somebody or doing something for somebody.
Yeah.
I was very conscious about like what that says about him and his demeanor and the type of superhero that he's going to be, you know, like, there's like a random throwaway moment where he's trying to meet his, girlfriend at the time. And like, he notices somebody like breaking into a house and he stops him and gives him a place to stay for the night. He's like, hey, if you want a job, you got it.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah,
you know, so yeah, there were a lot of conscious choices about like what his actions, even on the most basic level, will say about him really.
Well, and his I think there's just so much that is like underlying in your book, which is, you know, you don't necessarily bring to the fore, but if you're reading it like with a, you know, as you should be reading most things, like with an open mind or trying to look at things in a different way, what starts off is, well, first of all, let me just say, before I forget to say it, I love how you use kind of like the quote unquote, sort of like cheesy Superman power, like the super ventriloquist. Like, I'm like, okay, like that's really smart. Like the way that you used it. And I also feel like there's a lot of stuff in here about like in this particular scene that I've chosen to speak about, right? Like, there is a, like, maybe if this character who's committing, like, I feel like who is committing this act had been approached with empathy further on down the line, like, maybe this never would have happened, or he would have never made this choice to commit this violent act. Like, I feel like we're sort of in this society that immediately makes assumptions and wants to judge people immediately for like what they do without looking at the underlying cause. Now, I will also contradict myself into saying that, yeah, sometimes things are so horrible or people have had enough chances that it's like, okay, I don't know what we do with this. You know, I'm not smart enough to say that, but I think that you've addressed a lot of like, I think it's great because this character, the superhero character, interjects and the person immediately sees what they might have been about to do. And they're like, oh my God, like, what did I do? And a lot of the times somebody will commit a terrible act and it's too late, right? Like, it's like the line has been crossed. You're going to jail. Like, you know what I'm saying? And this person is prevented from doing what they're going to do. And they immediately see the repercussions of what they almost did and how bad it was. And I just felt like that was a very smart way to approach the scene and a very interesting way to look at like the nature of where we are in our society too, with like policing and might makes right. And maybe it isn't the best thing to like shoot somebody, you know, immediately or ram them through a wall. Can you speak a little bit about that? Because I mean, I really feel like in our society, especially kind of like the way things seem to be going, everyone just wants to take the easy way out and just be like, yes, violence is the way, and just eliminate the cause of the problem without looking at what the underlying cause is. Am I making any sense here? Am I reading too much into it?
No. I'm actually really glad we get to have this conversation. I think a big part of it, right, is that the physicality of the character, the strength, his ability to solve confrontations with his might, right, is such a, it's a temporary solution, and it's an air quote easy solution. It's easy for the moment.
Yeah.
But you realize it doesn't actually solve anything long term.
Yeah.
So that's where the air quotes come from, right? I wanted John to be a hero who considers the long term and his impact as a hero. You know, even though he is the first superhero to emerge in this world, it's not like that concept hasn't existed for a long time, right? Like, he lives in a world that is supposed to mimic our own. So it's safe to say that the iconicity of what a hero is and ought to be, even insofar as like the superhero archetype, is concerned, has you know been distributed right throughout his pop culture inside of his world, and I really wanted to explore the idea of somebody who's looking to really solve the problem long term. Otherwise, why do it at all?
Yeah.
But also, yeah, I did want to explore sort of the reactionary nature of the world we live in and how that backs people into corners, you know?
Yeah.
Like sometimes people who might do a bad thing or an awful thing, not that they're forced to do it. I mean, they have their own free will, but they are almost coaxed into doubling down on those things because they are immediately judged and they feel like the only safe haven they have is to surround themselves with people who are like-minded to the plight of the thing that is getting them this adverse reaction.
Yeah.
But I also really think it's interesting. It's good to explore, like, sort of what is, like, the sum total of a person? Because we've all done bad shit. You know, we've all done something bad. Some of us have done a potentially awful thing.
Yeah.
How like, at what point does that define an entire human being, you know, who does hundreds, if not, does hundreds of things every day. Some are neutral, some are good, some are bad. And, like, I think in a world where our entire lives are on the internet and so much of ourselves are made public that it becomes difficult to even just exist as a human being, but also to do so without somebody trying to like shape a narrative about us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a complicated situation, and especially like in dealing with how that correlates to like underlining the performative nature of the male ego, right? Like if we are already sociologically geared towards existing and operating for the sake of other people, then like, of course, when you're put in an environment where people can and will comment on every little thing you do and make their opinion known and judge you, how do those two things, like how does that weigh down upon someone?
Yeah.
You know, especially somebody who is at the pinnacle of sort of, I guess I won't say pinnacle, but especially somebody who has the platform that this character has and will continue to grow as this series goes on. Like that is an insurmountable pressure. Like no matter how many buildings he can lift up, there's no amount of superpower that makes that more palatable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because when I read this first issue, one of my expectations from our last interview, and again, you know, I didn't get a chance to really read the book the first time. And now having read it, it's like I kind of see where you're going more with this. I expected something kind of like darker or more just because it had to do with the male ego. And I thought that that was like a very interesting reaction. Or like, you know, male reaction to being, you know, whatever you want to call it. Like I expected, and I just expected something, I don't know, like kind of like a little more, I don't know, judgy about like where men are. And, you know, and it's funny how that speaks to my mindset. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts to that, because in our last conversation, I thought, okay, this sounds like it could be taking it to like a dark place or like a place where we're discussing things that are uncomfortable. And at least in this first issue, I didn't feel like that was brought up too much. Like I felt like everything was like, it was a pleasant story to read. Like, you understand what I'm saying? You know, I mean, I've read your previous books too. And in some of that stuff, things got a little bit darker, but like, and maybe that's where you're going, but can you speak to your thoughts on like what people's expectations might be like when they hear about, you know, that's on me, right? But I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. I mean, I really wanted this first issue to poke at some of the core conceits of the story without hyper dramatizing You know, first issues are really a balancing act because you want to set a tone, but you also want to have the leverage to surprise a little bit and to be able to make turns and shifts. And I mean, issue two definitely, you know, there's a little bit of a time skip. So he's been a hero now for like 2 years, I think, around the time we pick up with issue two. And so he's doing this on a more regular basis. It's in some ways, you know, being a superhero has lost a little bit of its shine. You know, it's become his job, basically. And so that same logic applies to a couple of other things in his life that he once cherished. And so we dive a little bit deeper into some of like the emotional and mental gray areas of this book's themes. And like I said, the domestic abuser from issue one, his name is Tom. He comes back in issue two, and there's a, I mean, I won't spoil too much about it, but there's almost like a Batman and Joker, like Killing Joke interrogation scene, at least in terms of the physical language the visual language of that scene, where John goes to visit him in prison. And it really begins to open up some of the... It starts to make a little bit more of like the emotional exploration of the story feel a bit more raw, because you're looking at the aftermath of the male ego and its exploits, in a really kind of tragic way. You know, like this is what becomes of a person when they overstep and they know they've overstepped. And so John, after having made a pretty major mistake, has to look this man in the eye who did an awful thing and feels, I mean, he's been irrevocably changed by it.
Yeah.
By the guilt of that. And he has to think about sort of what that means. What that means as it relates to him and the mistake he's just made.
Yeah.
And why he doesn't feel quite as bad as he does. So yeah, it's definitely not going to stay as chipper as issue one. But you know, that is such as storytelling, right? Like it ebbs and flows, but this first issue, I wanted it to kind of keenly introduce, sort of where these characters are coming from, who they are, their psychologies, their sort of emotional state, and just sort of the quote unquote like metaphysics of the world that they live in. And as we go further and further into the story, it becomes a little bit more emotionally raw because it becomes more real. You know, the consequences of actions and of decisions begin to bear down on the cast. And, you know, by virtue of that, it just becomes more intimate.
And how many issues is this going to be?
So right now we're thinking 4 to 5 of these oversized issues.
Okay.
And I mean, you know, these issues are like roughly anywhere from 34 to 40 pages each. So they're sizable, you know. Like issue one was 40. Issue two, we're looking at 34. Issue three, probably 34, 36. So we're planning on keeping that size roughly all the way through. Maybe in the last issue, we might add a couple more pages on there. But funnily enough, I originally thought we'd be able to get this done in 3 of the oversized issues. But the further along I get into writing the story, the more I realize I became a little bit too obsessed with like keeping the pacing tight, because I was thinking about traditional superhero comics. And like sometimes I feel like in a 20-page issue, very little happens and then you have to wait a month.
Yeah,
so I was
like,
okay, I need to make these incredibly satisfying and like emotionally relevant. And I realized I think we're doing that, but also in order to let certain things land the way that I want them to land, we need a little bit of breathing room. So yeah, we're looking at maybe 4 to 5 of these oversized issues. So we'll probably be clocking in somewhere around 200 pages by the time it's done.
Got it. That's awesome. Well, so one of the major sort of like conceits about this book is being able to do good because you feel good, right? Like, I mean, that is kind of like in the past conversation that we had about this book, I mean, we kind of like talked about that at length. But one of the things that when I was reading in this issue, it's never really, at least to me, spoken out loud, like that's what this is, right? You're giving visual cues as to like what's happening to him physically. And there's like, you know, little panels of like his pulse going up or like it looks like something happening to him. They look like bones or femurs or like I'm not exactly sure what those are. But
yeah, so those are the it's like the space between neurons. Those are called the synaptic cleft.
Okay.
And what you're watching is actually the release of dopamine synaptic cleft.
Yeah. But I mean, can you speak to me about not visually not narratively or expressing that through text, but trusting the viewer to know what that stuff is or how his powers work in this first issue without outwardly expressing it? I mean, there's definitely a thing in there where he's like, oh, I'm running out of juice or I'm running, but you don't lay out like how this works. And I was wondering to you if there's any concern on your part, like, are people going to understand what I'm talking about without having to have had sort of the backstory that I or other people that have not listened to interviews, you understand what I'm saying? Like, it seems like you're trusting in the reader a lot to understand like what's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't like when, especially in comics, because it's a visual medium, I hate when people over-explain things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I understand that people want to rush through and speed through a comic, but you know, in my mind, I want to do as much as I possibly can in the sequential art, so that the text is really just flavor, you know. And I want the text to be additive. So yeah, I threw in a couple lines here and there that make further implications and will hopefully operate in tandem with the visual storytelling. But ultimately, comics are visual. You know, I don't want to give you like a Kevin Smith Guardian Devil, you know, like word vomit parade.
I liked Guardian Devil. Anyway,
but,
go
but
on.
You know what I mean, right? Like,
I understand like what you're talking about.
There's something about doing that is inherently nonsensical with comics. And I'm working with great people, like incredibly talented artists who are not only good at like making something look pretty, but they're storytellers.
Sure.
And so I really wanted to take advantage of that. I mean, I think issue one, there is a part two where he's with Issa and she's like kind of poking around. She's like about how he does what he does. And he's like, you know, it's dopamine, you know, like my physical and sensory output is altered by the amount of dopamine in my system. And so we're trying to use like these inset visual cues of like dopamine releasing or being sort of dried up in the synaptic cleft to correlate with these moments. And using that visual motif as the story goes along to communicate some things about how the character is feeling emotionally, but also like physically what his output's going to be. And it also is going to imply a lot about like his psychology, like what makes him feel good, what makes him feel bad, right? That will be visibly communicated by dopamine releases. And also like, what is he going to be capable of because of it?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was like a key component. And I don't like beating somebody over the head with explanations. You know, I hope it's clear and I'm going to do my best to communicate it clearly, but it's comics. Like why, if I can cut, like, as you mentioned, there's some really beautiful art in this book and I want to do whatever I can to cover up the least amount of that as possible.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, the art is absolutely striking and you know, the whole package is always like with your stuff is extremely professional and, you know,
thank
up to
you.
Par with anything that would be on the shelf. Like, and when I said Stuart Immonen before, like, I mean, he's like one of the greatest as far as I'm concerned. So your artist is doing a fantastic job there. Like no complaints there. I do want to talk a little bit about like, I mean, it's not only, you're sort of not only like taking on like, you know, this masculinity stuff, but it seems like you're also taking on some things regarding superheroes in general. Like, I mean, I mentioned before, he doesn't have a superhero name. Like there is a scene where he has to go to like City Hall and they're like celebrating him and they're like, what's your name? And, or what do you call yourself? And he's like, he just says his name. And it's like, you know, the advice of like the mayor or whatever is like, yeah, you need to fix that. Like, you know, yeah. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of trying to play around with some of like the core tenets of superheroing. Some of it is simply because I don't want to become too focused on dressing the ice cream cone with sprinkles, you know, like I want to make some great tasting ice cream.
Yeah.
And so part of it is because of a degree of focus. Like I've gotten asked like, oh, what about like, are you going to build a superhero universe? Absolutely not. Like I have no interest in doing anything like that because I think it distracts from like the intention of this story to begin with. And insofar as being small and intimate, but also, I also thought it would be interesting to take little things about little staples regarding like the superhero genre and playing around with that. So, you know, right off the bat, his first outing as a superhero, the superheroing that is required of him is to be like you had mentioned, like, he has to be like emotionally available for somebody, right? Yeah. Like he's not going to come in there and smack the shit out of him.
Yeah.
He's going to try to be there. He doesn't have a name, right? Like he says to the mayor, he's like, aren't they always a little bit masturbatory?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's, and so, you know, it is a conscious choice because I think the little things about like what this character chooses to engage in also say a little bit about who he is as a person, you know, like simple but iconically designed costume, doesn't really care to choose a name for himself, you know, decides to kind of go the more therapeutic route. He's actually pretty, what's the word I'm looking for, logical in his approach. Like I think introducing that scene, like he's talking to the mayor's assistant and she's like, yeah, big jump, like for the press, you know, like cool superhero landing. And he's like, but I'll break the steps.
Yeah.
He's like, it's like, if I land on those concrete steps, like they're going to crack. It's like, no, it'll be fine. And then he does it and the concrete steps break, you know?
Yeah.
So I also like think that introducing a certain level of practicality to the superheroing adds some limitations to his capabilities in a way that gives me interesting ways to challenge him. Like, not that the physics are entirely real, but introducing a degree of pseudophysics give me the position to make the basics feel interesting, I think. You know, like in that scene, like in the domestic violence scene, you know, he has a moment of sort of internal monologue where he's like, yeah, this is too far to jump. Like if I were to jump through the window, like I'd fall through the floor.
Yeah.
As you get in issue two, for example, there's a moment where he has to stabilize a skyscraper. And the reality is if a man-sized object were strong enough to lift a skyscraper, he would gut through the side of the building like a needle in a finger.
Yeah.
You know? So we get to find some really interesting ways to solve problems that keep things interesting. That was redundant. But I think that they prevent the... What's the word I'm looking for? They keep scenarios from being boiled down to, oh, he's Superman. Like it's just that easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? And I also think that having him have to endure hardship in his day-to-day superheroing and be a problem solver actually makes him a little bit more endearing. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's not like this is totally easy for him.
Yeah.
Like he has to learn and think and be practical. And so it just, to me, that's just like another layer to his character.
Yeah. 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 No, I mean, it all works really well. The other thing I wanted to point out is, I love the inclusion of Spanish in this being half Latino, whatever we're calling ourselves these days. Yeah, I love that. I was like, oh, I can actually read this. Like, you know, you have translation in there, but, yeah, I mean, I love the fact that there is that in this book. And, I also really like the idea And this has kind of been done in superhero stuff before, but I like how you address it, which, you know, there's a big sort of like burning building scene. And afterwards he is like, am I deserving of this power? Like, you know what I mean? And people approach him with like thankfulness and gratitude and, you know, and it is very much like right now, yes, you are, like, because of what you did with it. Right. Can you speak to right. that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I really think that, I wanted to kind of play around with the guilt of his actions and of his indecisions. Cause I think, I mean, it really just speaks to like my own insecurities as a young man, you know, when I feel like I've failed, that always kind of comes back and is reflected in my future choices. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm like making right by my mistake, but I am thinking about it a lot. And, you know, when we're putting John sort of on the pinnacle of those high stress decisions to be made, and like this character is not going to be without the burden of making mistakes, like that's, but like he knows it, and those mistakes will haunt him because he understands the position that he's in and becomes increasingly more aware of that as time goes on, as he performs his duties as the sort of quote unquote Superman of his world for a longer period of time. And I think that burden and that guilt and that consideration leads way to some interesting emotional turmoil. And so I wanted John to really consider that, and especially like how that's going to, how his power, his relationship with his own power correlates to certain things that he does or chooses not to do that will then affect him psychologically and in turn reflect his physical ability, right, to do more. Maybe I'm like walking myself in a circle with all of that, but I think that the relationship between his sort of guilt or his perception of his actions and how his emotionality and psychology affects his physical output, and like that's a little bit of a vicious cycle for the character, and I mean, I think we were able to introduce that in a somewhat heartwarming way in issue one, but that will lead to some complications moving forward for him and his consideration of what he is able to do, not only physically, but like emotionally, what he wants to do.
Yeah. 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 I mean, one of the things I very much enjoyed about this too is the idea of like not for whatever reason this character wants to do good, but doesn't necessarily feel the immediate responsibility of the power that he's got. I mean, there is a scene here where there's something going on and he's like, yeah, let the EMTs or, you know, first responders like earn their money. And another character has to be like, what are you talking about? Like earn their money. Like, you know, they could be in danger and you have an ability to do something about that. You know, speak to me a little bit about the whole, you know, great power comes great responsibility thing that seems to be foisted upon, you know, Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, like the big icons, and not necessarily having this character have that, you know, imposed upon him from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wanted to introduce John as somebody who is well-intentioned but incredibly fallible.
Yeah.
As any man in power is, right? As any person in power is. And I also found that to be a really unique opportunity to introduce Issa as a character who would come to represent his moral compass. You know, like sometimes somebody in a position of power loses enough perspective where they need someone to be able to give them direction. And that was a big moment for me insofar as sort of making his romantic interest in the series a morally fierce human being. Like, she's a strong woman who pushes him to be better. And in turn, I mean, you come to recognize that that moment with her and in the fire and, you know, with the people on the streets of the city impact him in such a way that it shapes him forever. You know, like, he, despite the fact that, you know, I've kind of poked at the fact that he makes a pretty major mistake in issue two, in many ways, he's also a much better superhero because that moment made him care more about why he's doing what he's doing and helps him to understand the impact that he makes by doing it. So, for example, in issue two and moving forward in issue three, he actually, when he feels awful about something that he's done in his personal life, he copes with it by saving people. Like, he stays up all night and will, like, travel across the world to solve these problems for other people, because it's the only way to, it's the only way for him to cope with his guilty thoughts. Mm. And so, you know, that is very much a reflection of that moment with her and in that rescue scene in the fire. I mean, even, you know, we kind of poke at it a little bit too at the end of issue one, where he's doing the meeting at City Hall and they surprise him by saying that they're going to, that they're unveiling like a statue of him, monumentalizing that thing. And he talks about it as like a monument to his greatest failure, because he wasn't going to save that woman.
Yeah.
You know, if Issa hadn't pushed him to do it. And that will be a constant reminder of really, like, not only how negligent he can be, but like of how major, how his decisions lead to major impact, whether he realizes it or not.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that just becomes such a crucial part of this character's psychology moving forward.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask about in that particular scene, and I know we're coming up towards an hour and I don't want to keep you too long. But one of the things I wanted to ask about is the sort of, this is a pivotal scene in the series, right? And I mm-hmm. I am a big believer in, and this, I'm going to kind of bounce around a little bit in asking this question because I don't want to sound like a jerk asking it, but so I'm a big believer. I was raised by a single mom. Mm-hmm. I am a big, you know, I've been married for a long time, feel that my life has been made better by my wife and then daughter and stuff like that. I feel that the feminine presence and influence in my life is something that has made me better and changed me for the better. In reading that scene, it very much feels like the female influence pushing you to be better. And I feel that there may be male fans who are like, wait, this guy would have been a dick if it wasn't for the woman. Like, especially the way the narrative in popular culture, just not popular culture, but just culture in general, seems to be like men resentment of female influence, or men having resentment of the rise of female power. You know what I'm saying? And trying to deny feminine influence at all. Can you speak a little, because I feel that this scene is like a very pivotal scene in this issue, and I feel that it's very important. And I feel that some people may take it the wrong way. I took it in the way that it was intended, I feel like, and I feel that it is very much, it is important for us to listen to the feminine nature of our beings and our female partners and our, you know, caregivers and stuff like that. Can you speak to that scene a little bit, like, as more like what you wanted, or thoughts about how, what to say to people who might misinterpret that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad that, you picked up on that, because a big part of this story is about how his romantic interest balances him and gives him grounding and perspective on what he's doing and why he's doing it. And it's also about, like, the way that she delivers it, and that is so, to me, inherently feminine, right? Like, we I think in issue one already we kind of use, like, the moment of her just, like, very simply putting her hand on his cheek as a visual motif for, like, this emotional connection that these two characters have. But also, like, there is a degree of like softness and like the way that she is able to deliver those moral tools and those ethical tools to him by using like her femininity, make it more palatable for him. And that's why he has such like a difficult time dealing with her calling him out, like when she gets frustrated with him the next day, you know, when he's considering just like leaving the fire to its own devices, you know.
Yeah.
And that's something that we play a lot with moving forward, in so far as like what that means to him. And we'll also sort of explore maybe why that feels so impactful to his character to begin with. Like we actually dive a little bit into his past in issue two and his relationship with his parents, his father, his mother. And it I think begins to explain a little bit more about why her being the way she is affects him so much, for better and for worse, mostly for better. Like I think by all intents and purposes, like you can see that, like, if not for her, like he would not have made the right decision in that moment, and he might not have made the right decisions in moments beyond that, you know. So yeah, I also think about like the importance of intimacy for men. I think there's something very, I mean, there is like the image of the stolid, like strong, fierce man who is like stone. And I think that those are the men that end up cracking the most under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And there is like a resiliency added by having access to like those softer, more intimate emotions, and having like somebody equally as strong who are contributing those things to you in your life. Like I was raised by a woman as well. Like I was like, you know, like I did not have a hell of a lot of interaction with my dad, and what I did have was not particularly good. And so I place a lot of value on that. And I think that for me, for example, like having been raised by a strong woman afforded me a decent amount of emotional intelligence and a lot of empathy for people. And so I think like those are traits that are inherently like tied to femininity and the role of a woman in a man's life. And you know, that's not to say that there aren't things that a man contributes to a woman.
Sure.
But this is a lot about sort of the affectations of masculinity, and a big part of that about that is like masculinity's relationship with the feminine elements in his life, and sort of how those things complement him and actually make him better. That was really, really crucial for me, because it's also like being the best version of yourself, whether it has to deal with the explicit themes of this book or not, is often impacted by your supporting cast in your life and sort of what they're contributing to you. And, you know, that does get a little bit more specific and granular insofar as that symbiosis between man and woman. But yeah, that was that's a really crucial detail about the story, insofar as like how she reels him in a little bit and structures him, and does it in a way I think only a good woman can.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you know, I very much enjoyed this first issue. I'm looking forward to checking out the second issue. I mean, as a huge Superman fan myself, I was literally in a bar last week and had like an hour long conversation with other creatives, literally about Superman. Like that's all we talked about was Superman. So as a huge fan of Superman and Superman adjacent things or Superman inspired things, I think you've got something really interesting going on, and I'm really curious to see where it goes. And it's a really well put together professional package, and you should feel proud of like what you're doing with this, because I very much enjoyed it.
Oh man, thank you so much. That really means a lot to hear. And I know like over the last 2 years that you and I have gotten to sit down and have these conversations, I knew like I needed to make sure to reach out to talk to you about this book, because I wanted your opinion.
Well, thank you.
And I wanted to see how something like this would land with somebody who is such a big fan of the iconography and the mythology of the Superman, because we are sort of zagging a little bit, but also trying to do it in a loving way, you know, not in like a contrarian or like shocking way, but like take the things that I love about it and find how we can say something else using those tools. So I'm really grateful to hear that, man. So thank you for saying it.
No, absolutely. Congratulations. We didn't get to talk about Minutes to Midnight, which we're going to have to do some other time, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you want to let people know like what it is, like really quickly?
Sure. Yeah. So Minutes to Midnight is a collection of short stories that I wrote and art directed and got to work with some of the most talented people in independent comics right now. The sort of core of the collection as a broad stroke is that the theme is perspective insofar as, in my mind, the title Minutes to Midnight represents this idea that at the threshold of a new day, the tomorrow is dependent on what you decide to take with you and what you decide to let go of, right? So what in the 24 hours preceding that are you letting die, and what are you giving life? And that will affect your ability to live. And so we have a sort of supernatural coming of age story that is like a riff on King Midas and the Golden Touch, but it deals a little bit more closely with a character's empathic abilities as opposed to physically turning somebody to gold, mm-hmm. having the ability to emotionally turn somebody into gold or vice versa. We follow that up with Reflections and Other Little Devils, which is a surrealist crime thriller about an aging detective who's forced to reopen a 20-year-old cold case when a string of suicides begin to reemerge across a property line. And his discoveries and drug-laden flashbacks end up sending him on a collision course with his ex-wife, who's somehow involved. And I got to re-team with the artist who picked up the last two issues of Area 51, the Helix Project, except he gets to color his own art in this story, and we got to be super experimental. It is my love letter kind of to Vertigo, DC Vertigo stuff. And then we have Time Fleeting War Immortal, which is about these two semi-immortal warlords who reconvene throughout every great battle in human history to settle some beef that has started in a time before time was measured and extends to the end of all existence as we know it. And it is ultimately a story about the changing landscapes of war and conflict and how temporary those things are. How temporary the philosophy behind those things are, but the impact behind that sort of violence and that vitriol and that hate, how that is immortal, or as immortal as we let it be.
Yeah.
And then finally we have The Bear Market Businessman, which is, it takes place in a sort of neon adorned New York City future. And it's a story about a trillionaire and the janitor who, cleans his castle. And that the cool thing about that story is that it was sort of the prototype for 3/4 of the creative team behind Rise, because that was my sort of testing ground for both Ryan, who drew Rise, and for Matthias, who lettered Rise. I wanted to that was sort of me dipping my toes in the pool of working with them, and obviously they blew it out of the water. And so, yeah, I think for anybody that's interested in Rise and what they're seeing visually from the art and from the amazing lettering design, that was our first collaboration together.
Nice. Well, very cool. I mean, I enjoyed both projects. I think that you're doing some really good stuff. So congratulations on everything. I mean, I appreciate you coming on to talk about it.
No, dude, it's a privilege to be here, man, and to have conversations like these. And, as a creator, I'm always very grateful to be able to dive into like the nitty gritty with somebody who reads closely and wants to talk about those details, man. So, you know, I'm grateful to have an interviewer such as yourself, man, and the opportunity to have these types of discussions.
Well, thank you very much. And again, your name is Trevor Fernandez Lenkevich. One of the greatest names ever has been on this podcast. Let's remind people where they can find you, sir.
For sure. Yeah. On Twix, as Christian would
Twix.
Call it.
Boo.
At P-Watch Press, on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, Pocket Watch Press. And yeah, if you're listening to this on June 18th or thereafter, we are probably campaigning on Kickstarter for the first two issues of Rise, primarily for issue two, but you can pick up issue one in various bundles or in the add-on menu. And we're super excited to take this next step in this story and really dig into the weeds of you know, the themes and the core conceits of this web we're trying to spin. So we're super excited. Got some really, really beautiful cover art going into this second issue as well. Maybe this might be like one of the best lineups that I've had for a single book yet. And we've got some really fun opportunities for you if you so choose to get in with this story on the ground floor by backing on Kickstarter, like some really cool art commissions from Ryan. Of various sizes. We're trying to make that accessible. Nice. And even an opportunity to get immortalized and drawn into the book. So that's super cool. Like, funnily enough, Christian, the mayor.
Yeah. Showed up in your other Minutes to Midnight, right? I think as well. Who is that?
Yes. That was a backer.
Nice.
Arguably my biggest supporter of my career. Shout out to Brian, who got drawn into Minutes to Midnight and Rise. And I was like, you know what, this guy's been so gracious and so generous with me. I decided to put his likeness on a recurring character.
That's
such
great.
As the mayor. So we always try to make those cameos something cool and impactful.
That's nice. Well, again, the book is called Rise. You are Trevor Fernandez Lenkevich. June 18th, correct?
Correct.
All right. Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. I will contribute. I really enjoy your work. Thank you so much for joining me. Again, my name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. You can check us out on parttimefanboy.com. Email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are no longer on the hellscape that is Twix. I've been saying that for like at least a year now, so you must know. Still on Facebook, still on Instagram. I do have a little webcomic called The Periwinkle Puss, periwinklepuss.com. Thank you for listening. Please go check out Rise when it launches on Kickstarter. I'm telling you, if you're a fan of this sort of stuff, you will not be disappointed. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-time fanboy. Bye.